This episode of the Disney Nerds Podcast is brought to you by our official travel agency, Once Upon a Time Travel. Take advantage of a fun-filled vacation this summer and get a free meal per person per night at select Walt Disney World quick service dining locations when you book a 5-night, 6-day room and theme park package at select Disney Value Resort hotels. To book this offer and any other Disney travel, contact Jimmy Horn at Once Upon a Time Travel on Facebook or at onceuponatimetravel@yahoo.com.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello, and welcome to show number 220 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, this week it's Jimmy, and I'm here with Lisa. Hello, Lisa, how's it going?
How you doing tonight, Jimmy?
I am fantastic, and looking forward to getting into this show. This week we have with us Thomas Estrada. Hi Thomas, how you doing?
I'm doing great, I'm happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you. Thomas is an animator. Worked on a lot of Disney feature animation like Treasure Planet, Atlantis. Also did some other stuff like The Prince of Egypt and El Dorado. Not to mention some of the video games, Cars 3, a lot of the Disney Infinity stuff, Cars 2, and Toy Story 3. And I also see some other stuff that's not Disney, like Gears of War and God of War. That's freaking awesome. So we're excited to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is very cool.
So, Thomas, just to get us started, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into animation and kind of that path from, you know, maybe where it started and to where you are now.
Well, yeah. So basically, I like a lot of kids, I grew up drawing. It was just something that I loved to do. And so I did that all through school. I was always like the class artist drawing book covers for people and that type of thing. And I was on the yearbook staff and all that. And so I always enjoyed drawing, and it was something that, I guess I found that it kind of came easy to me, which, I don't know how those things happen, but I didn't have a lot of direction with it. You know, this was before the internet, where you could look up to see how do you become an artist or an animator, or is that even a career at all? And so, you know, after high school, I didn't really know what to really do with it. You know, I thought I could just, it would just be a nice hobby, because I wasn't really sure how to turn it into a career. And so I found myself just kind of doing just different jobs, that were not art related at all. After high school, I got married, young, and which I'm still married happily, which is really awesome. 27 years.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
But with the art thing, I kind of found myself just doing regular jobs, and one of those was actually pest control. I was working and just kind of killing bugs for a living, because I didn't go to college. I didn't have a lot of education. And so that was just, kind of my life, which was fine, and I wasn't really thinking about animation or anything. And so, but what ended up happening in about 96, going to a family reunion with my wife, we met a third cousin of hers that she didn't even really know who he was. And it turned out he was a Disney animator.
So you're like, that's awesome.
Larry Flores. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So I was, like a lot of people, oh, my God, there's a guy here that works for Disney. And so I was so excited to meet him.
Right.
And so, you know, I told him who I was and I liked to draw, and he was just the most wonderful person in that he just took me under his wing. He said, you know, I didn't know if I could even do this or at all. And he says, you can totally do this. And so he started showing me kind of how to learn the entry level of animation, which is like the in-betweening, you know, drawing the in-between drawings that your boss would give you. And so he started showing me this kind of on his own. He was bringing home Xerox copies of Fantasia 2000 that he was working on at the time.
Oh my goodness.
And he was showing me how to do the in-betweens, you know. And so I was just so stoked just to be doing this at all, you know.
Sure.
And so we did this, you know, he started teaching me how to do that. And he was helping me build a portfolio of the stuff that Disney was actually looking for from an artist, which is life drawing. They want to see how well you can draw humans and animals. They're not really interested in seeing cartoons. They know that if you can draw a really good human, animal, and very natural pose, because they're so difficult, that, you know, you can do anything after that. And so I started focusing on that. And so what ended up happening after a few months, this was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months of doing this, he said, you were ready to apply. He helped me put my portfolio together, and I went and applied at Disney. And at the time, they were just finishing Hercules, and so they weren't really hiring. They said, we like your portfolio, but we don't really have any openings. Come back in a few months. And so I was a little bummed because I didn't get in there. But there was this brand new studio opening right down the street from Disney feature called DreamWorks. And they were working on their first animated film, a film called The Prince of Egypt. And so I went over there and applied. And it was funny, I remember, because I was working that day in pest control. I was on my pest route, and DreamWorks happened to be nearby. And so I drove in to the DreamWorks studio. At that time, they were in an office building on the back lot of Universal Studios. Hmm. And so I remember when I pulled up, and I was in my pest control truck, and they had this big guard gate, you know, to keep us rabble out. And I remember the guard, he looked out the window and he saw my truck, and he opened the gate up and let me come in. I assume he thought I was there to spray the place.
Yeah, probably thought you were just a vendor.
Yeah, you're just there to do a little work.
Yeah. I was going to do some exterminating there at DreamWorks. And so I drove in and I dropped off my portfolio, and I was in my pest control uniform, and lo and behold, you know, a few weeks later, they called me up and they said, we love your drawing, and come in and take the in-betweening test, the entry-level animation test. And I did that. And then I got the phone call and they said, congratulations, you're going to be starting in production on The Prince of Egypt. And that was in 97, and just incredible. That's just kind of how it happened.
Let me just ask one question, because it came up, and you kind of mentioned this, and I was looking at this when I was looking at your IMDb.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned being an in-betweener, and I see all these different titles. So in-betweener, assistant animator, additional cleanup animator. So can you just define some of these roles and how that progressed?
What
the normal progression is for an animator?
Yeah, so in hand-drawn animation, this is when we were still drawing on paper with pencils. Basically, there's two phases of animation. There's the rough animation, where the animator roughs out the drawings, and they're really focused on the movement of the characters. And so the drawings are really scratchy and rough. And once they get that movement down, then it goes into the cleanup or the final line animation, where they take those rough drawings and they draw the final drawing that you see up on the screen with the really clean lines, and they want to make it really pristine and make sure every character stays on model, which means that the character stays looking like the way the character is supposed to look. And so when I first got into animation, I was in that secondary or the cleanup animation, where we were drawing the final drawings that you see on the screen. And the in-betweener basically is the guy that's the entry level. So you'll basically get drawn, and it might be a character looking to the left. And then drawing number 10, the character might be looking to the right. Those are the two drawings you would get from your supervisor. And you put those two drawings together on a light table. And then you draw all the in-betweens of the head slowly moving from left to right.
Nice.
And so those are those tweens.
That's
awesome. And that's the kind of the slow, tedious you know, making that character move across the screen is doing those in-betweens.
Because you're basically drawing that same picture with small little differences
Increments, over and over and over again.
So it's tedious, I'm
sure. Over and over again. Yeah, and kind of the way it works, you know, feature film would run at 24 frames per second, and each drawing represented a frame or sometimes two frames of film. And so you could draw, and at that time when I was doing cleanup, you know, I was not super fast. I was kind of average. I would average maybe about 30, 35 drawings a week. And so after 1 week of drawing all of these images, you would have just over a second worth of animation ready for the screen.
Holy cow. That is a lot of work for just a second.
For a second. And so, you know, you could see why some of these animated films, you know, would take, you know, a couple of years and with several hundred people working on them, because we're drawing those frame by frame, 24 frames per second, you know, maybe doing those 35 drawings a week.
And it's my understanding, or so I've read, that computer animation, even with all that technology, even takes longer, correct?
I don't know if it takes longer, but there's definitely a lot of stuff that's different. You know, hand-drawn animation, if you want a character to do a particular, you know, if you, the hard part with some of those things is like little things that you wouldn't think about, like characters touching each other in computer animation is really difficult, because nothing really sticks to each other unless you make a tool that can make a character appear to connect with another character. And so, or doing things like hair can be really difficult. And so it's all these little differences that, you know, you may be saving time in one way using the computer, because one thing with the computer animation is you can set a pose now on frame one, and you can set the pose on frame 10, and the computer will actually move the model from frame 1 to 10 on its own. And so it eliminates a lot of doing those in-betweens. But at the same time, the computer wants to move it from frame 1 to 10 in a very mechanical way. And so oftentimes the animator has to go in and force it to move more naturally in between those two key poses. And so there is still a lot of work that's involved with the animator having to make the motion look natural.
Very interesting.
Right, it's just a different type of work.
It's a different type of work. It's a different tool, but the animation principles are the same. You know, the animation principles that we're using, that were developed by, you know, the nine old men were were Walt Disney's like top guys, and they came up with these animation principles of spacing and things like anticipation and squash and stretch. And those same principles are used in the computer animation as they were with the hand-drawn stuff. We're just using a different tool now with the computer rather than drawing those.
That's incredible that, you know, those guys were that groundbreaking, that even in today's day and age where all this stuff is done on a computer, those principles still are probably built into the computer programs.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things that you can spend a lifetime, you know, trying to master. You know, there's so many within those principles, you know, things like arcs and anticipation and, you know, creating the illusion of life and the illusion of weight. You know, nothing on the computer or on the paper has weight, you know. And so what we have to do as animators is you're playing with the timing and the spacing of how things move to make it appear heavy. You know, if you have a bouncing ball on the computer, you can set your ball, the key frame on the ground at frame one, and then frame 10, you can put it up in the air, and frame, you know, 20, you put it back on the ground. Well, the computer is going to make it float up and then float back down, and it's going to look very even, and it doesn't appear to have any weight. And so what you have to do as an animator is you're going to play with the timing. So you want it to slow down as it goes up, and then you want it to speed back down. And so by doing that, you now have this bam, 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 where the ball appears like it has weight now. And that's just an illusion. It doesn't really, but you were playing with the timing to make it feel like it does. And you do the same thing with the characters. You know, when you have a big character like Sully on Monsters, Inc., you're going to slow him down as he takes a step, you know, forward. and then you're going to speed him up when his foot comes down. And so now it by doing that, he's going to feel like he's heavy. He's going to up and then bam, down, up and then bam, down. And now you've got that illusion like he is heavy, even though he's not at all.
That's awesome. So you double back a little bit here. Mm-hmm. So you were drawing in high school, spent time on yearbook, drew pictures for mm-hmm. your friends. Did you ever see during that time you heading down the road of animation?
Not at all. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about animation. I didn't really know that it was a real career. I was kind of hoping to maybe, you know, you would take those placement exams in high school about what career you should go into. And they were always art related. And it would be things like a graphic artist, like at some firm, like a manufacturing firm where you can draw designs. And so I would think, all right, well, I guess I can do that. I'm not really sure what that means. What are they drawing? That was kind of as far as it went. You know, aside from that, I thought, well, maybe I can work at like a T-shirt place and draw designs for T-shirts. Like they kind of need artists, don't they? Or maybe get into some kind of advertising, like drawing catalogs for JCPenney's or something. But that was kind of as far as I thought about it. I wasn't really sure what to do with my drawing.
Prince of Egypt, Road to El Dorado. You then made the jump over to Disney to Emperor's New Groove was your first movie with Disney, correct?
Yeah. Before that, I did a little bit of freelance on the Tigger movie before I was hired full time onto the Emperor's New Groove. And so, yeah, that was my first credited film with Disney was New Groove.
And then you went on to do Atlantis and Treasure Planet.
Yeah, and then their last hand-drawn film at that time at Disney was called Home on the Range, was the cow movie. And then at that time, they had decided they were going to end hand-drawn animation, and so a lot of us got laid off. They eventually tried to bring it back a little while later with Princess and the Frog and yeah. Winnie the Pooh. But I wasn't there at that time. So I worked on their last hand-drawn film at that time was Home on the Range.
I'll just say on a side note that you worked on two movies, Atlantis and Treasure Planet, that on a recent show that Jimmy and I did, we discussed underrated Disney animated feature movies, and those two topped the list.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, you know, and it was during that time, you know, when computer animation was getting more and more popular. You know, it was a new medium and people were excited about it. And the hand-drawn stuff was just slowly kind of getting phased out. And so, you know, they didn't perform very well at the box office. And everyone can kind of see the writing on the wall that the computer animation stuff was kind of taken over. And so, unfortunately, those films at that time were just kind of... you know, we're just kind of ignored for a while.
I mean, I get that, you know, computer animation is the future, and that's just progress, and that's just the way things work. But, you know, I was excited when Princess and the, well, being from New Orleans, I was obviously excited already about the movie.
Yeah.
But in addition to that they went back and did that hand-drawn animated movie, because it to me, it still has this. I mean, it's like listening to a good album on a CD or listening to it on vinyl. It's that warmth and that I think you just don't get with the computer animated movies like you do with the hand-drawn animation. So I understand that they're not going to put all their eggs in that basket, but I wish they would invest some time and effort into doing an animated hand-drawn animated movie every now and then.
Yeah, it would be nice to see, you know. It's unfortunate. And I at the same time as well, yeah, I get why. I mean, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort and money to make a hand-drawn film, and, you know, just fine, you know, of getting that system back up and running, you know, would be very costly and a big investment. And so, yeah, I'm just not sure when that would happen again. It would be nice if it did, but, you know, there's not a lot of those guys around. I mean, I think there's literally three traditional animators that are still at Disney Feature. And they're mostly doing they do little things here and there. When you see hand-drawn stuff come up, like even on Moana, there was the tattoo sequence that was all hand-drawn, And those three guys, Eric Goldberg, Mark Henn, and Randy Haycock, animated that. But for the most part, they do a lot of tests. They do a lot of review of other work, of the computer animation stuff. But there's not a lot of that hand-drawn stuff going on anymore.
I didn't realize that was hand-drawn. So they hand-draw that, then that gets put in the computer and placed where it needs to be?
Yeah, exactly. So all the tattoo stuff was all hand-drawn by those three guys. Yeah, pretty neat stuff.
So we go from movies to gaming. Disney Infinity. What brought that shift on?
Well, so after I finished with Disney on Home on the Range, I went back to DreamWorks because they were working on their last hand-drawn film, which was called Sinbad, The Legend of the Seven Seas. And so I worked on that one. And then DreamWorks at that time had decided to end hand-drawn films as well. And so I was fortunate enough to be at DreamWorks when I got retrained onto the computer animation. And I got to work on their couple films with Shark Tale and Over the Hedge. And then at that time, you know, like what happens a lot with animators in L.A., you can find yourself in between jobs. You know, if a studio doesn't have another film to go on to, you know, you'll often just get laid off. And so, you know, I was out of work after Over the Hedge. And so just, you know, looking to stay employed, I fell into some video game stuff with Technicolor, actually, in Burbank, had a small game studio. We were a contract studio, which means we were just kind of helping other developers finish their games. And so Technicolor hired me, and I got to work on those games like Gears of War and God of War 2 and Uncharted just a whole variety of different types of things. And then at that point in 2008, I got rehired with Disney to come out to Salt Lake City, where Disney had a game studio, a development studio in Salt Lake City called Avalanche Software. And so I rejoined Disney here in Utah. And that's where we started working on games like Toy Story 3 and Cars 2. And that eventually led into Disney Infinity. Kind of how that happened is, you know, if you've ever played the Toy Story 3 game, one of the features of that game was an open world sandbox style play called the Toy Box mode. And it was this Western town, Woody's Roundup Western town, where you can kind of just run around and do whatever you want and play with the toys in that world. And it was just this open world, do what you want. And that part of the game of Toy Story 3 was really popular. Like, kids really enjoyed it because they can just go in there and play and run. And there was no time limit or no level to complete. You can just horse around in there the whole time. And so they wanted to turn that into a franchise. They thought, well, maybe we can do a sequel of this and do like a Buzz Lightyear, like Star Command style open world. And then somebody said, hey, what if we did a Monsters, Inc. world also? And then it just kept building on that where, well, we can have all these different properties where all these toys can play together and just kind of see how we can expand on this. And that eventually led into Infinity.
And those toy boxes were my kid's favorite part of the Disney Infinity gaming series.
Yeah, that was really the heart and soul of the game. You know, they wanted to do the play sets where the characters can be in their specific worlds, and those ones kind of followed a storyline and there were more missions to complete. But the real heart of that game was the toy box mode, where all of those different properties can now come in together and just play and interact with each other, and you can build your own worlds and just horse around and do whatever you wanted. And that's where, you know, the to me, where the game, you know, really shine.
I know this is probably going to be like asking you to pick a favorite kid or something, but out of all the projects you worked on, if you had to pick a favorite.
To me, it really was Disney Infinity. To be able to animate on just such a wide variety of characters was just a dream come true. You know, to one, for a week you could be animating Iron Man and just doing all these cool motions for Iron Man, and then the next week you're working on, you know, Darth Vader, and you're just doing cool stuff like that. And then they throw in, hey, we're gonna put Donald Duck in the game. All right, we get to animate Donald. And what does that bring? You know, the different styles of animation, whether you're doing super cartoony stuff or you're doing superhero motions, and now you're doing Star Wars stuff. And then they throw in a classic character, you know, like Mickey or, you know, Baloo. And it's like, wow, now I get to animate this. And so just that variety of every day being able to work on something new was just unbelievable. I don't know if I'll ever have that again. You know, I mean, working on the feature films was awesome. You know, work on Treasure Planet, you know, I was on the Jim Hawkins team, but, you know, for a year, year and a half, I drew nothing but Jim Hawkins. Like, that was it, which was cool. But to have that variety where you get to animate all these other different characters was just unbelievable.
A little bit of everything.
So, yeah, yeah.
As an animator, I'm going to ask you this. So they just announced, and we were just talking about this on our last episode we did just recently, they closed the Great Movie Ride and Hollywood Studios, and they're doing a Mickey Mouse-themed attraction. And it's going to be featuring this new animated Mickey Mouse. What is your opinion on that? And I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of this brand new animation. I know they're probably not trying to appeal to me, but your opinion on that new style of animation they're using for those classic characters?
Is it like the little shorts that they're doing where it's really stylized Mickey, that one
Correct.
You're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, it's almost like I mean, really white.
It looks like new vintage.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like they're paying homage, I think, to the vintage stuff, but it's very stylized and they're really pushing the design, right? You know, I'm kind of the old school as well. Like, I love the old classic Mickey and the rubber hose animation that you saw like in Steamboat Willie.
Sure.
And if I would love if they just went right back to that. I mean, I'm not even as a big a fan as when they even put pupils in Mickey, like in the Fantasia stuff, like with the Sorcerer's Apprentice, because they went away even from just the plain dot eyes that he had. And so I really liked that old style of the rubber hose animation that you saw like in Plain Crazy and the stuff that you see in the Main Street cinema. And so I that's kind of where I gravitate towards, but I do like that they're trying to at least, you know, honor some of that with the new style. I mean, you still see some of that look in there, even though they're really kind of pushing it and making it really edgy looking. So, you know, I don't mind it. It's nice just to see Mickey again.
Good point. And we, you know, that's one of the things we talked about. I think this is the first attraction that we know of in Walt Disney World that just features specifically based around Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that's always a plus. I mean, that's the cool thing about it. And, you know, that was one thing we were excited about, even with Infinity. You know, we initially got to include the Sorcerer Mickey into the game. And then a year or two later, we got to animate the classic Mickey and with Minnie as well. And I was so thrilled just to have those two in the game, you know, to be able to animate Minnie Mouse. You know, in the Infinity game, I got to do a lot of her basic mechanics in the game. So when she's, you know, when she's running around, I was able to animate a really fun skip, you know, where she's skipping along, and those types of things. And so it was always cool just to have them animating and running around. And so, yeah, I think it's really neat just to see.
Thomas, my 8-year-old Isabel is, I would call her a budding artist. Her favorite thing she got for Christmas was her How to Draw Animals book, How to Draw Fairies books, How to Draw People books. She'll draw any second she gets. She has quite a few art kits. She spends a good amount of time, you know, sitting down, drawing, bringing it over, you know, having us critique it. So I called her and asked her if she had the opportunity, what question would she ask you?
Yes.
As a Disney animator. And she came up with, my 8-year-old, what was the hardest Disney movie that you worked on and why?
The hardest Disney movie I worked on. Let me think. it probably, with the movies, it probably was, probably Treasure Planet, I would have to say. Only because Treasure Planet, it was hand-drawn, but it also incorporated a lot of computer animation. If you remember John Silver, Long John Silver, he was the cyborg. And so he had that mechanical arm and the mechanical eye. That was all computer animation. And even the little map, the ball map, the sphere that Jim Hawkins had was computer animation. And so what made it difficult when you combine the hand-drawn animation with the computer animation, like I was saying before, hand-drawn animation, sometimes, a lot of the times, the drawings will represent two frames of film. And so you can get a lot more done because they're going to shoot it twice. And it's called, what they call that is being shot on twos, is what they would say in production. But whenever you incorporated anything that was computer, the computer doesn't look very good when it's on twos. And so it wants to run on every single frame, which is called to animate something on ones, which means every frame is a separate drawing. And so whenever you had anything that was computer in contact with the hand-drawn part, it all had to be done on ones, which meant every frame was a drawing. And so because Treasure Planet had so much computer animation, we were drawing on ones almost all the time. Almost the entire film was done on ones. And so it made it very, very slow and very tedious because of those computer elements that were combined in there.
Wow. Well, thanks for answering that.
Oh, sure.
So with that being said, you've traveled this road from, you know, a movie animation to video game animation, Disney Infinity. You've bounced back and forth between DreamWorks and Disney and back to DreamWorks and back to Disney.
Yeah.
So with that being said, what are you working on now?
So what happened was, so I was at Avalanche Software and we were doing Infinity. Disney at that point, after 3 years of Infinity, and I was on it for 6 years. I was on it, even prior to its initial release, we were doing a lot of pre-production and that type of thing. And so, in about, 2016, I think somewhere in there, Disney had decided to finish production of Infinity. And so with that, they closed down Avalanche Software, the development studio in Salt Lake. So I found myself out of work, which is, again, typical of an animator. But what happened was Avalanche Software got reformed under WB Games with Warner Brothers. And so we went back to work, the studio, as a now Warner Brothers entity. And we started working on some games for them. And funny enough, the first game that we did as a Warner Brothers studio was the Cars 3 game. And the reason they did that is we were already working on Cars 3 that was going to be part of Infinity. And so when Disney shut down Infinity, Pixar said, well, we still want this video game for when Cars 3, the film, comes out. And so Disney said, well, since you guys are almost done with it, we had already been working on it. They worked out a deal with Warner Brothers, and Disney said, we'll license the characters to Warner Brothers, allow us to finish the game as a Warner Brothers game using the Disney characters. And so the first game we got to do was an actual Disney game, which was the Cars 3. And then from there, Warner Brothers, we rolled on to another unannounced title that they're working on currently right now. But at that time, I started doing I started doing Comic-Con shows and doing commissions and just started having a lot of fun drawing again. I'd been in computer animation, for quite a few years, after the last hand-drawn Sinbad one at DreamWorks, was probably 2004 maybe. and three. And so I hadn't drawn a lot since then. I was doing mostly computer animation. And so after Infinity and after Cars 3, I started drawing again and doing commissions and my own kind of thing. And that just kind of took off where I was just started doing more shows, Comic-Con shows. And I found that there was quite an interest in doing these shows where people wanted to hear about things like Emperor's New Groove and Treasure Planet and some of those old films. And so it just got to be where, you know, my focus was doing those. And so I kind of took that step in faith and kind of went off on my own to see what I can do with this. And so, in September, I just kind of left the studio scene and production stuff. And now I'm just doing freelance art and shows and drawing Comic-Con stuff and commissions.
That's got to be an interesting transition, you know, not working under deadlines, not working, kind of doing your own thing and kind of, you know, at your pace and not having to worry about those things. I'm sure when you're working as an animator for someone else, they there's certain expectations that come with that.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the kind of really exciting, fun thing and the terrifying thing at the same time, you know, because now for the first time in 20 years, I don't have that regular, you know, paycheck coming in. You know, now, you know, I have to make sure that I'm motivating myself to get my work done on time, to get my commissions finished on time, and to generate more work, you know, by producing stuff and you know, doing the shows and meeting people, which has been just fantastic. And so it's really exciting. It's really cool to just be drawing and doing my own thing. And, you know, at the same time, yeah, it's a challenge. I've never worked for myself before. And so it's definitely a whole new world, so to speak, but it's been a lot of fun.
We ask this of all of our guests, Thomas, and
yeah,
this question is, since we are the Disney Nerds podcast, this question is something we ask everybody, and it's how did Thomas Estrada become a Disney nerd, or what makes you a Disney nerd?
Wow. Let's see. What makes me a Disney nerd? You know, I do remember one of the first Disney real art things that I got. You know, I mean, I grew up in Southern California, so I remember going to Disneyland, you know, as a little kid, you know, when they had the big parking lot, which is now, you know, California Adventure. I remember when that was just a big open lot, and you would park, you know, a mile away and wait for the tram to come around and pick you up and take you all the way, you know, to Disneyland. And so I guess the biggest thing I suppose is I remember my first big Disney art book was the Art of Fantasia, which I really loved, and I got really into that. And that was one of the earliest things I remember being really excited about Disney in animation. But I guess the other thing is just, you know, with Disneyland, I guess especially, is the memories of growing up and some of the old attractions that don't exist anymore, like the ride with the, you know, when you were shrunken down with a microscope. I don't remember the name of even that ride any longer. They had little tiny models of the ride and the little tiny people, and they would stream past you while you were waiting in line, and you could see how small you were going to be. Yeah, there was one of those rides, and so I remember those things, and I know that makes me nerdy that I actually remember that.
That's awesome. It made an impression. That's great.
Yeah. That and the other thing that I really used to geek out a lot was when I worked at Disney Feature in Burbank. We were in the animation building, and the thing that always would just every day going into work, I would geek out watching. They would occasionally bring out old original art and display it behind glass on the walls in the animation building. And so to walk through the halls and see original Pinocchio drawings on the walls was just something that I would geek out every day, you know, that I worked there. You know, it didn't matter. I would walk by and just stand and just like ooh and ah over these original drawings of, you know, Ward Kimball, of drawings of Jiminy Cricket and things like that. You know, just never wore off. You know, I would every day just look at that stuff and just be freaking out.
That's my awesome. Productivity would plummet. I'd never make it to the office.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
We thank you so much for your time tonight, Thomas. We know time is valuable in this world that we live in. So with that, where can our listeners find you and find your work?
Well, if you just did a search of Art of Thomas Estrada, just that one word, you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook. I have a website called artofthomasestrada.com. And from there, you could see a lot of my work. You can contact me from there for commissions. I do custom commission drawings or paintings, that type of thing. And yeah, you can find me just about anywhere. Just looking there.
Fantastic, man. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We truly appreciate the time, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and welcome to the Disney Nerd family.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show. This has been a lot of fun. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I never take for granted that I get to do this for a living. It's just been unbelievable. I still can't believe that somebody would actually pay me to draw. It's just been just incredible.
It's very cool when you think about it. And, you know, we love to geek out when we, you know, me and Lisa's been talking all day, you know, because it's a big deal to us to be able to talk to an animator. That's just like the coolest thing in the world. Like, what, you know, we feel very, very fortunate to be able to spend some time talking to you. So we truly appreciate your time.
Oh, likewise. Yeah, I appreciate you guys as well. This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
All right. Well, for myself, Lisa, and Thomas Estrada, Quaharini.
So long, everybody.
Adios.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the haunting's free. So hurry back, we would like your company.